Incidentally, do you see any other side effects or tolerability issues of ruxolitinib other than cytopenias?
So cytopenias, without a doubt, is the most common and most difficult to deal with and is almost universal for folks. Other side effects we see, I've had some patients that get dizziness and headaches that have limited our ability to give ruxolitinib. There are some rarer side effects but can be kind of scary, such as shingles and chickenpox reactivation. So we see that in increased proportion in patients with ruxolitinib. But I've actually had one patient whose shingles was recurring and recurring severely enough where I actually took them off the ruxolitinib. There's also some reports of patients who have lived in areas endemic to tuberculosis having tuberculosis reactivation. And there's also a question, and looks like definitive proof now, that there's an increased risk of non-melanoma skin cancer in patients who are being treated with ruxolitinib.
Non-melanoma skin cancer. I was just about to ask you why you would see, what was the other problem you were talking
There
about?
was TB
Oh, yeah, I
reactivation.
was going to ask you, so what do you think the pathophysiology is for these weird infections? Unusual infections, I guess.
Also, there are reports, I haven't seen a case myself, but there's been reports of patients with undiagnosed subclinical hepatitis, hepatitis B infections or hepatitis C infections that flare up when on ruxolitinib. So clearly there's something with immunosuppression in this drug and suppressing the B cells probably that are allowing these infections to kind of roar up in patients whose immune systems have otherwise been controlling these diseases over time. And that kind of makes sense now because ruxolitinib is being used to treat chronic graft versus host disease, which is kind of targeting these B cells and trying to reduce that inflammation. Why is this particularly happening? Not sure, but it's starting to piece together a puzzle of how this drug could be an immunosuppressive agent and be used in that manner.
Are preemptive anti-infectives recommended?
Yeah, so what I typically do is I just check my patients to make sure that they have immunity against varicella. Most patients that I see have had exposure to the chickenpox or at least have a vaccine. Most of my patients who are eligible for the shingles shot, there's a newer version now that's a killed vaccine, is very safe. So I often recommend that they get that prior to starting on ruxolitinib, or if they start on ruxolitinib, get it anyways, because now we can use that. The older live vaccine, you don't want to give it while a patient's on ruxolitinib for the risk that you might cause an infection. I routinely screen my patients for a remote history of hepatitis as well. And then simply for TB, I just ask the patients, have you ever had TB or been in an area that's endemic for TB?
And what about the non-melanoma skin cancer?
Yeah, so I counsel folks on good sun hygiene practices, sun avoidance, wearing sunblock, because there does seem to also be a link between sun exposure as well and developing these non-melanoma skin cancers. And then we talk about regular skin checks and making sure that if you have an abnormal-looking mole, yet you go see your local dermatologist and get it lopped off.
Again, what do you think the pathophysiology is?
Yeah, I would suspect it's also an immune-mediated phenomenon. There's something about removing the immune system here that's allowing these things to flare up. So again, the parallel I draw is to bone marrow transplant because we see non-melanoma skin cancers at an increased rate in post-transplant setting where patients get long-term immunosuppression.